Hello, hello, hello. My name is Jill Cody, and welcome to Be Bold America. Be Bold America is a live bi-weekly talk show for those who are motivated to step out with the bold actions necessary to begin reuniting this country and save our democracy, and for those who want to understand the challenges ahead and learn what they can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing to save our democracy. Our future depends on it. Our program today is Threats to Democracy and Preventing Decline, and it was to include an interview with a guest from Protect Democracy, in addition to our in-studio guest, Mike Rotkin, five-time mayor of Santa Cruz. However, they were called to act boldly. This past Thursday, Protect Democracy had to rush to an El Paso court, requiring them to postpone their interview for today, but they have rescheduled for September 29th in 4 weeks. Why do they need to rush into court? Because Protect Democracy needed to protect democracy and fight Donald Trump, President of the United States, who instructed officials last week to break the law in order to finish construction of the border wall by ignoring federal expenditure procedures to spend billions of taxpayer dollars, by blowing past environmental regulations, and to, quote, take the land necessary to do so. In addition, he said that he wanted the wall black and built by the time of the election next year. Trump told these officials, don't worry, meaning don't worry about breaking the law, I'll pardon you. Let that sink in. The president of our country, the democracy the world envies, believes laws are a hindrance. The rule of law is a cornerstone of democracy. Without it, there is only chaos and crime. We have big things to do. In our K-Squid studio today is Mike Rotkin, a former five-time mayor of the city of Santa Cruz, and who served six terms on the Santa Cruz City Council between 1979 and 2010. Mike retired after teaching 42 years in the Community Studies Department at the University of California, Santa Cruz, where he served as director of the Field Studies Program, supervising student interns working on social and environmental issues in Santa Cruz and around the globe. Recently, he was recalled to teach part-time at UCSC. In addition, he serves on the board of directors of the Coastal Watershed Council and the Democratic Women's Club of Santa Cruz County. Mike, welcome to Be Bold America. It is an honor to have you on the program again. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, and thanks for that somewhat overly long introduction.
And I even cut some things out. You have quite a bio. So it's very nice to have you here again. And Mike, I can't think of anything more of a threat to democracy and to speed its decline than having a president in the Oval Office who thinks the law is irrelevant. Also, Trump does not believe democracy is a good system and lets everyone know it, as he basically said at the G7 summit. He wouldn't defend it. What can giving the middle finger to the rule of law and democracy lead to in our country?
Well, you know, I'm always someone who's been sort of reticent to throw the word fascist around. People often will say just like loosely, you know, oh, so-and-so's a fascist because they do something that you don't like or something. But this really is the edge of fascism. And President Trump is surprised. I mean, you always think he's gone as far as he can go. That, you know, he can't top that one. That was the worst thing possible. This is in some ways the absolute worst possible thing he's done so far. Because if you think about this, Adolf Hitler was elected to office. It wasn't a coup. He didn't come to power through power of the gun or something. He was elected by the citizens of Germany to be the chancellor. And then he slowly began ignoring various kinds of laws and regulations, ignoring his own legislature, deciding that he had power to make these various kinds of things happen, physically throwing people out of having his supporters throw people out of office and so forth. And this is what's now beginning to happen, to say to people, well, you can go just break the law, and don't worry, I'm the president, I'll pardon you. I mean, we have, even under the worst presidents that we've had, and not just in my lifetime, going back, even Warren G. Harding never said to anybody, you know, you can just like break the law and I'll look after you, don't worry about it and stuff. I mean, there were scandals, there's all kinds of things in our history that are not very attractive. But I think this is the first time we've ever had a president that actually openly says to people, you can break the law because I want you to do something. And if you do what I tell you to do, don't worry because I have the power to pardon you. That, I mean, that's the end of the rule of law. And without the rule of law, democracy is like ridiculous. It's not. It's nothing
right,
like
what it can
be. Right.
There's just only chaos, crime, and that's why we're envied around the world. Is there are many countries that the rule of law is by a dictator.
Right, and that's what's the difference between a dictator? If someone can say, you know, I'm in charge, and you can go do this stuff, and there's nobody to stop you from doing it, even though it's against the law, and other agencies might have different points of view, and there's a whole bunch of procedures set up for environmental review and things that should be happening that would expose how ridiculous this wall is. It's not a useful way to try, and even if you believe in secure borders, this is not a way to secure borders. But that discussion can't even take place if someone just announces, we're just going to build it, and it doesn't matter. There's no process. There's no legislature. The legislature doesn't get to appropriate the money. The citizens don't get to debate the value of this thing. The idea of the Senate is a, you know, debating place where people can talk about the virtues of things. Doesn't have to happen. He doesn't have to get an appropriation. He's just going to take the money somewhere out of the Pentagon budget and do what he wants to do with it. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it also, I think, demands a discussion on American values, because what is America? What do we stand for? It just seems to me, to understand our democracy and prevent its decline, we as bold citizens really need to think about American values. What do we stand for, or at least try to, as individuals and as a country? Nature abhors a vacuum, and if we don't attempt to hold on to our values, then the vacuum it would create would be filled with what? It could be filled with the fascism, or a theocracy, or kleptocracy, or an oligarchy, or a corporatocracy. I mean, this is what we're
sort of aiming at all to wrap them all together and have all of those at the same time, which is not so good, not as bad as it can get.
So, what are some of the American values we need to try to live up to? I want people to remember that there is a reason why this country's lasted 243 years.
Right. Well, I think maybe one of the most important values, and it often gets left out, is the idea of community and the concept of we're in this together in some way in this world. And the idea of individualism as it's propounded by the conservative right, the idea that it's all about number one, do what's good for you, look after yourself. That's the only thing you have to worry about. And somehow that will all work out. That I don't believe that is an American value. I think American value of individualism is people realizing that, yes, you have individual rights and you should, you're not an ant in an ant hive and, do what everybody tells you to do and follow orders or something. But you're part of a society. You're part of a group with other folks. And you can only accomplish the things that matter to you by working with other people, not by running over them or ignoring them or sort of imposing your will upon them. And so this is a kind of perversion of individualism because, again, the idea of individuality seems important. I think that is an American value. We don't want to be all the same and, conform. I remember the worst things you could think about in North Korea where the people all wear the same kind of clothing all the time. Whether it was even true, I don't know. It could have been propaganda. But that image of everybody wearing the same kind of clothing frightened me as a kid when people talk to me about it. And so, the idea is, no, I want to be myself. I want to be an individual person. But you realize early on, if you're not demented, that you can't get what you want out of life if you don't work with other people to get there. If everybody's going after their own individual narrowly self-interested goal, then how do you get somewhere you need to be? So there's nothing wrong with self-interest, but it has to be sort of social self-interest, something that I can get that I want along with other people so we all get to it. Because if I try it by myself, it's going to be in a combat, and we're both going to lose, or all going to lose if that happens.
Well, your comment about community is excellent one when it comes to El Paso, because what our president has done is he's really demonized an American city. What president has done that before? Talking about an invasion into El Paso, it's hurting their small businesses, it's hurting their tourism, being presented that they're crime-infested when they have a very low rate of crime. So it's really attacking a community, which is an American value, building community and supporting each other in an interdependent reality.
Which he's done again and again. He did it with Puerto Rico after the hurricane devastated the island. He did it with Baltimore very, very recently and stuff. And this idea of, and again, who it is that he's demeaning, the communities that he's writing off are not surprisingly communities of color. El Paso is a largely Latino community. It's not 100%. It's a mixed race community, and people there actually have a pretty good set of race. Now, there's problems, but a pretty good set of race relations generally compared to other places in the country. And he goes after Baltimore, which is a largely African-American city. He goes after Puerto Rico, which, of course, is all Latino, or virtually all Latino. And so this is a way of securing his base, you know, the people who sort of basically think about a white America, and they don't like the idea that there's going to be any kind of different people here, that they're already here, that our society is already a multicultural society. They really hate that, and Trump plays to that. And he really, it's not that he's just somehow like accepting it. He's amplifying it. He's sort of sending people out on a mission to sort of secure that. And he does own these Nazi and right-wing white supremacist activities and stuff, because he's encouraged that sort of thing. And that's, once again, this idea of "I'll pardon you." That happened in one of his early rallies when he was still running for president. Like, so encourage the crowd to drag somebody out of the meeting that was going on and stuff, and imply that, don't worry, we'll look after you if you get in trouble for doing it or something. So this guy has no respect for law, no respect, and the big thing he's going after are people of color and trying to sort of to secure his base, which is largely white working people.
Well, it's also an American value we want to say, as an open society, that ideally treats everyone equally.
Really?
That's an American value.
It is. In school, we used to talk about this thing, even in third grade or something, about how we were different than sort of the old European model where there was not that we don't have social classes, we do, but that it was not like hereditary where you're born into a certain class and you can never leave there, or like the caste system in India, that our society, you can move around, that you can change relations with other people. It's an open, mobile kind of society where people have options to go other places, move other ways, and not be controlled in a narrow way. And that's completely, off the agenda for Donald Trump. It's like, no, he's not interested in that.
Well, it is an American value to reward achievement, to be able to. It's not a caste system. You might be born in a certain class, but that it's the phrase, anybody can grow up to be president. Right. We would tell our children that. You can grow up to be president. That's what makes America one of the American values, of this mobility, to be able to move out of that and be rewarded.
And again, it's sort of funny because there's less of that actual mobility in our society than sometimes people think. Mm-hmm. Very likely, if you're born in lower class society, you're not going to likely leave it and sort of become, the sort of Horatio Alger story, I'm going to become fabulously wealthy. It does happen. It's possible. There's no structural legal basis that limits it in some way, but it's not happening that commonly. But the value, that dream, that you have the right to move up, that you have the ability to sort of get
to aspire to,
and if you work hard, you can get there. That is a value, and whether it actually happens or how hard it is to actually make that real, that's a strongly held value in the United States.
Well, and I also think the loss of that aspiration maybe have led to this president too, that people don't feel they can share in that American dream anymore.
I think that's some of it. People, I think, underestimate how much just one simple fact that the real wages in the United States fell between 1970 and today. In other words, this is real wages, or how much real stuff can you buy with your money? Food or clothing or housing or shelter, whatever the things, or even entertainment, whatever you're going to do with it. How much of it can you purchase with your wage? And the amount that you can purchase with your wage has been falling in the United States since 1970. Between World War II and 1970, people had a sense things were going to get better. Your children were going to like have a little bit more. And again, this isn't always about piling up useless objects or that kind of materialism where people are simply trying to like surround themselves with things. It's just the idea that you're going to be reasonably comfortable, that you're going to be secure. When you get older, you shouldn't be worried when you go to bed at night that what's going to happen when I lose my, when I retire? Am I going to have enough to make it? Or people are on these plans that, well, if I live another 10 years, I'm going to outrun the money that I've put together in my life to make it happen. That's what people didn't believe was happening between World War II and 1970. There was a sense of it getting better all the time. It's working out. And starting in 1970, it was quite well organized in the society to have it happen, a slowdown of the real wages for working people in the United States. And that's Donald Trump's base. That's people that feel like things have been slipping away from them. Now, their response isn't always, rational. It's not always the best way to respond to that situation, to think that Donald Trump's going to help you out of this mess. But I think that's a lot of the anger and a lot of the idea that nobody has helped me. Nobody else has helped me. In fact, I heard people saying that during the campaign from the right. oh, I don't think he's, you know, going to be a great president or something, but he's different. He's going to do something, at least. Somebody's going to do something, because nobody's done something between 1970 and where we are now. And so I think that that was a lot of the appeal here, is not some honest belief that he's going to, like, fix things for people. I don't think people are that stupid. But there's an idea that he might shake stuff up. But people say that those kind of phrases. He'll shake something up. It could be better, and it hasn't been otherwise. So that's what I like him.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. We're speaking with Mike Rodkin, five-time mayor of Santa Cruz, and I'm your host, Jill Cody. So, Mike, immigration is an American value. Yeah. It's probably one of the... It created this country.
Right.
It created this country. All of us, unless
except
we're Native
Americans.
I was just going to say that, except for the Native Americans, we all are from immigration descendant. You know, we're descendants of immigrants. So, but what seems to be happening is that American value and moral values have sort of been inverted, that immigration is a bad thing now, and what's good to be, it seems to be deplore it. You know, that we don't want immigration as a paramount example of that, that trying to make them sound like there's an invasion, maybe bugs, you know, coming, or worse, when I hear that word, I want to say, well, where are the tanks on our border? You know, where are those military soldiers at our border? This is not an invasion, but it's just a real disregard of human rights and identification of the enemy and unifying a cause around an enemy. Those are fascist characteristics.
And for Trump, he's now gone openly and quite clearly beyond the notion of opposing undocumented immigration, cutting back on the number of legal immigrants coming into the country, particularly from countries where there are people of color. And but not in general, the idea that immigrants are from anywhere and stuff, and the idea that other people are all going to be a problem when they get here. And again, every statistic indicates that immigrants are the most energetic, that, you know, they play a disproportionate role in Silicon Valley and the new inventions and things that allow our technology to develop in the way that it has. They do the hard work, the jobs that nobody else is interested in doing. Most immigrants come here looking for, they were looking for work. They're not looking for a handout. They're looking for a chance to make a living and you know, support their families. And for Donald Trump to talk about these immigrants, and again, Fox News plays a big role in this, to persuade people these immigrants are just coming here for the free ride. They don't want to do any work. And it seems to me that most people, if they really, you don't have to look that far, look around them, can see that immigrants are doing the hard work. They're out there in the fields. If you drive around this region, you don't see white people out in the fields. You see people of color out in the fields picking crops, and women and children, and sometimes even in the height of the season. And it's the idea that somehow they're looking here for a free ride, or that they're lazy or something, is completely absurd. The fact that sometimes people are out in front of the lumber company looking for, you know, a day's work or something, but they're not out there looking for a handout. There's not a cup there saying, please donate to me. They're saying, please hire me so I can work in really usually heavy physical labor of some kind around your house or around your business to get something done. So how people end up with this image that somehow the immigrants are lazy, or that they're on the take, or that they have these problems. It's just, there's no evidence for it. And again, evidence is not a big issue for Donald Trump or the right.
Well, and I also think this country believes in supply and demand. So if there wasn't a demand for their labor, they wouldn't be coming. There wouldn't be a need for them. And I do remember, it was several years ago, I think it was the state of Mississippi, decided that they would not let any people come in from Mexico to do, you remember this, picking
right.
tomatoes.
Right.
And they didn't, and they advertised for American citizens to come pick the tomatoes, and nobody came.
They lost the crop.
They lost the crop, exactly. So I don't know why we're not realizing that we've even tried this.
Yeah, no, it's completely... I mean, there's a film, if you've ever seen it, it's really funny. It was made by some young people. It's called A Day Without a Mexican. It's a short. It's about 30 minutes long and stuff, and it's sort of somebody wakes up in the morning and sort of goes through his life, and then you see all the things that Mexicans do, Mexican immigrants do in his life. This is in California. I think it was in San Francisco or something. You know, and it's like, oh, I mean, there's nobody delivering stuff that you need. need to have happen. There's nobody like doing any of the work in the economy that's providing the jobs in terms of the dishwashing and hotel support, maids, things like that. There's nobody doing the physical labor in construction. Nobody's picking food. There's no breakfast on the table. You know, so it's this is where it starts, and it goes through the whole day before you're finished. There's no entertainment. I mean, it's a day without a Mexican. There's not much happening, I have to say, because our economy depends upon immigrants. Every developed economy in the world depends upon immigrants. Some places it's people from Turkey. Here it's people from Mexico and from Central America primarily.
Well, I think Mar-a-Lago depends on immigrants. You know, this is the I just wonder about that. Is there a hypocrisy gene?
No. It's well developed, I think.
I guess. I mean, I don't understand how one can realize they're from descendant from immigrants, and yet turn around and not want to help any of the immigrants that want to come to America now.
Yeah, it made me laugh because Puerto Rico is still waiting on its relief, from FEMA, the Federal Emergency Material Assistance Agency, for the hurricane that happened over a year ago now. They're still waiting. Where's our money and stuff? And South Florida, where Mar-a-Lago is on the coast, just received payments. This was in the paper this morning. Just received payments for a hurricane that's on its way and hasn't even happened yet. So will he look after his own needs for things? I mean, he's not going to change his line on climate change, although that's the cause of the problems that they're facing, all these hurricanes. But relief, money to support the problems that he has? No. His country, his area of the country is going to get support right away and stuff, not Puerto Rico. Not California, if we have fires or whatever. That's not his problem. His problem is like his own little business somewhere.
Well, and also another fascist characteristic is otherization. And to divide, to intentionally divide this country, as this president has done, and whipped up a frenzy against people that are of a different color and want to come in and pick our tomatoes or strawberries here in our Salinas Valley and our artichokes, that otherization really is a divide and conquer strategy.
It is. And of course, if you can persuade American workers that this problem of falling wages that they've had since 1970 is not because of automation and changes in the way the economy operates and the lack and inadequate education to prepare people for the jobs that do go wanting in this society. We have a bunch of unfilled jobs in the middle and top level of the economy. If you can persuade them that the reason they're not getting a job or that their real wages are falling is because of Mexican immigrants coming over the border, then they turn their attention away from what's really going on and the real changes that are making stuff happen. And so, you'd rather, much rather have them blaming Mexican immigrants than blaming, capital and its decisions about where to make investments in the society and to replace workers with machinery and not share the values of what comes out of that with working people. It's like classic. Especially this Labor Day weekend. Think about that issue.
Think about that. This is Labor Day weekend. I think I started getting a real pit in my stomach when families were being separated at the border. And I was wondering, where are the family values crowd?
Yeah, really. Well, the cartoonists had a heyday with that. He's like, when this, is there some way they could get status as a fetus? Because then they'd get total protection from the Trump administration. Not if they're real children that are actually walking around.
No, that's proven out. And Trump also wants to bring back the federal death penalty and making sure. So it is the minute you're born, you're on your own. Well, according to a 2018 survey from the Public Religion Research Institute, a majority of white evangelicals believe immigrants represent a threat to American customs and values. So in their mind, immigration is not an American value, and yet they are a descendant of immigrants. This is where I get back to that hypocrisy gene.
No, it's startling that people don't understand that.
It also shows you, I think, the power of propaganda to be told over and over and over again that someone that might not have the same color of your skin or may not be your religion is bad, is wrong, and demonized, and something to be afraid of.
I think that's one of the unfortunate results of segregation in American society. most people don't have a lot of experience of people from different cultures or different ethnic groups or different races. And so, you know, they've never actually known, a white person has not known or actually had a close relationship to an African-American or to a Latino or an Asian person. And as a result, it's possible to demonize folks. It's a lot harder when you actually, you know, live among people and have interchange and action. I think I would guess that very, very few Americans have ever seen a farm worker. I mean, they get food on their table. It comes to, they get it somehow, you know, from the store or however it gets there, or they eat in a restaurant for that matter. But however they're eating, that food has mainly been prepared, whether it's, we're talking meat and seafood and vegetables. And I mean, everything that you get on your table comes from large immigrant activity and that stuff going on. And to somehow believe that, that's where did it come from? Or that that's such an essential part of our society, and not see that, not see that connection at all. I once took a bunch of fourth grade kids to the out to a farm where we were milking cows, and one of the kids saying, you know, he's just disgusted, you know, because he thought milk came in cartons. It's like, what comes out of that? Oh, that's terrible, you know. So I think most people have a pretty distant relationship to agriculture, where things, food comes from, or anything else. So that big part of our economy that's done by immigrants, It's a black
invisible
box that they don't see how it comes out of there, how it functions or anything else.
Well, I think the last big ICE raid, was that last week or just the week before? They just zeroed in on a chicken.
Foster chickens.
Foster chicken, was it?
Yeah. Foster, I forget the name of it, but something like that.
But it was a chicken farm, and this is where the immigrants were working on, you know, getting the chicken that we see in Safeway there on our wrapped up nicely in thighs and breasts and that sort of thing. And they picked up a mother who had to leave her breastfeeding baby behind. I mean, to me, is this an American value?
It's pretty hard to fathom that people would think that's a good thing.
This is where I get a real knot in my stomach when I see children in cages, and that people are supporting this. That it's okay to have children in cages, or it's okay to lose some, and they may never see their parents.
Connect again,
parents will never see their children again, and to be able to rip away a breastfeeding mother, I'm speechless, as you can see.
Well, we had something like this happen in Santa Cruz in the 1980s. It was then INS, Immigration Naturalization Service. Now it's called ICE. Came in a raid in the Beach Flats in Santa Cruz, which is a largely Latino neighborhood here, and I was on the city council at the time. And they often in the past depended upon local police departments to sort of be backup for them, because, you know, there's, even if there were six cars full of, pardon me, thugs, you know, coming into a neighborhood and rounding people up, children, anybody brown on the streets and anywhere else, they're doing this stuff. It's going on, but they can't do that without some basic support from backup from police department, because there's just not enough of them. If the whole community were to turn on them, they would be in trouble and so forth. So they went and rounded people up. There were kids in school who, at the end of the day, their parents weren't home when they came. They were supposed to, or didn't pick them up, because they had been rounded up by these raids. They rounded up about 22 people or something like that in Santa Cruz. And so at Bayview Elementary School, there were kids whose parents didn't come to pick them up when they usually pick them up. There were children rounded up, and the parents didn't know what happened to their children, because they were out there in the neighborhood, you know, wandering around and didn't have papers on them. Of course, you know, our children don't run around with papers on them. Thank God. I mean, we're not Nazi Germany. And the city council got involved, and that was the impetus for becoming a sanctuary city. To say that our police are not going to cooperate with these kinds of raids anymore. And they stopped. I mean, they still will round somebody up. They still will go arrest somebody. And that's actually, if the person's actually a criminal and they've done something wrong, fine, go get them, you know. But the idea of sort of this mass roundups that take place in Latino neighborhoods. And so what happens from that is people become terrified that if they call the police for a problem, they're going to get arrested. They're going to be dragged away from their families and from where they live. which is why the local police are now strongly in support of the sanctuary city status, because there's been a crime in a neighborhood. You show up, you want people to talk to you. What did you see? They need witnesses. What happened? It's like all they know is there's somebody lying on the street or something, or there's, if there were violence of that kind, or somebody was robbed or whatever it was. Well, what happened? Could, you know, what did they look like? Where were they driving? All this kind of stuff. And if you don't have some people sense that this is not connected to immigration enforcement, they're going to just run in their houses, close the doors, didn't see anything. And even if you get to talk to them, it's going to be, no, I didn't see anything. Nothing happened. I don't know what's going on or anything else. And the police need people to believe that the local police are concerned about public safety and will respond to them if they call 911 and say, I saw something and I want to report it and make that stuff happen. So the scale that this is happening that you're talking about in El Paso and these places on the border, it's way worse than, I mean, Santa Cruz is like really light and stuff, but even for us, it was traumatic. So I can't imagine what it's like when they were talking thousands of people being rounded up, or in this raid in Mississippi, a couple hundred employees in a place, all who have families and kids, I'm sure. So it's beyond belief on some level. And I remember this ridiculous debate going on: are these concentration camps? Somebody said, "Oh no, they're not really concentration." Well, what do you think a concentration camp is? They're not death camps. They're not. They weren't deliberately putting people to death, but are they concentration camps? They're exactly what a concentration camp is. It's ridiculous word games being played by people. So, to me, it was like really critical to understand how bad this is, how against American values it is to have the idea of rounding up. And I think the administration has faced some loss of support, because I think even some really serious conservatives, it's a little over the top to sort of separate children from their parents. I think that does reach a little deeper into it than some of the other things we might be complaining about.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, your ink spot on the dial. You may also visit KSQD's homepage and stream the station live to hear this show and all the other wonderful programs offered. Check the website for the program schedule. Please also consider becoming a sponsor of this show or another favorite. Community radio thrives on your support.
Hi, I'm Tom Hartman, your host for Progressive Talk on KSQD 90.7 FM, community radio for the Central Coast, 4 p.m. weekdays. KSQD is a vital media resource for listeners in Santa Cruz and Monterey counties and worldwide on the web. Please help support this station by making a contribution to keep the station thriving. Go to ksqd.org and give what you can to help keep shows like mine coming to you daily at 90.7 FM. You know, with six large corporations owning most of the media, it's essential that listeners support grassroots, locally run radio stations like KSQD. Community radio is responsive to its listeners and isn't afraid to challenge the status quo. Please join me, Tom Hartman, in supporting KSQD 90.7 FM, community radio for the Central Coast, by making your pledge today online at ksqd.org. That's 90.7 FM, KSQD. Catch me right here at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Thank you, and tag you're it.
Hello, this is Ralph Nader, and you are listening to KSQD, Santa Cruz's brand new community radio station.
Well, we're back with Mike Rodkin. And Mike, I don't want to leave this topic of immigration quite yet. The reason is that you think we've reached a new low by separating breastfeeding babies from their mother. But now we have legal children that are here because we do have some of the best medical facilities in the world in this country. And we have children having been given a deportation notice to leave the country in 33 days, which was several days ago.
Right.
And for the parent, pulling them off of the life-saving medical treatments or devices that they're on that's keeping their children alive or helping them get well, it's a death sentence for that parent. And for me, to me, that is the state. It's an act of murder in my mind. I just didn't think that our government could sink as low as what has been happening, and then this came out.
you have to believe that if people look back at this in time, they're going to be not only appalled, but they're just really going to wonder, like, what were people thinking? How did that possibly happen? Because I'm optimistic we won't be in this place forever, and we're going to find a way out of it. And you can look back and think about this stuff the same way people ask, like, well, how did Hitler come to power? Like, how did you know, the German people were not, like, genetically wrong, bad or something, any more than Americans are. And if they had, that happened in their society, he was always asking this question, how could it happen? Well, it couldn't happen here. It could only happen there. I think we're finding out it can happen here, and that there's a level of ability to put up with things, that accept things quietly, that should not be taken quietly. People need to speak out about them and get involved and make those things happen. And it will be shocking to people, you know, not that far from now, I'm sure, when they look back and think, they did what? I mean, it'll just be amazing.
It is a cruelty that is beyond imagination, you know, a politics of cruelty that just is beyond imagination. I could never, in my darkest moment, trying to think of doing something like this to another person.
It's this is a strange comment, but I'll make it anyway. The Germans knew what happened to all the people they locked up. They kept records. We don't know where thousands of children are in relation to their parents. I mean, it's like not only we kidnapped these kids, separated them from their families, and now we can't find them. I mean, the level of incompetence mixed with a lack of morality is staggering. It's like, we don't have any records about where we put who separated a kid from their parents, took them somewhere, and didn't write anything down about where they are or where they're going. How is that even possible? It really staggers the imagination.
Well, it's even worse than the lack of incompetence, because it's just the lack of caring. They just don't care about people and babies and children. It's heartless.
It is heartless.
It is heartless.
That's the right word for it.
And you did talk about in future, you know, people would say, how could this happen? And I did come across a while back a term called the dark triad personality. And in my mind, it conjured up a B-movie scene where a malevolent group would gather at midnight and sacrifice a virgin on the altar to the full moon, you know, the dark triad. But it turns out that this is actually a psychologist term for, I guess, the perfect storm of darkness and violence and in a person. And what a dark triad personality is a narcissist. And people have talked about our president being a narcissist, and it's so...
That's pretty hard to deny.
You just see that everything is about him. Just totally everything is about him. The other is psychopathy. As being a psychopath,
right.
And people have called our president a psychopath. You don't see any compassion, humility, empathy in this person. But the third, the triad part, the third personality type that is in the same person is Machiavellianism.
Right, just a mechanical way of thinking about how you're going to make stuff happen and sort of look after self-interest in the narrowest way. Just do the end always justifies the means, and there's no limits to what you can do as long as you have a clear sense of what your goal is and working to get there.
Well, and it's also Machiavellianism is using fear, frequently being cunning and deceitful, a cynical disregard of morality.
Really?
So what is happening at this border is immoral. It is immoral. And what's interesting about a democracy is we can't make a law for everything.
Right.
And so we do need to operate on traditions, values, principles, ethics, and morals.
Right.
They hold up. And when we find out something is immoral, and somebody will pass a law and try to deal with it that way. But basically, you can't make a law for everything. So Machiavellianism is, you know, political assassination. You know, he's voiced wanting to jail political rivals and journalists.
Right. And it's the whole locker up theme.
Yes, exactly. You know, the hurting, the frequent bullying, harsh tactics, lack of empathy, again, in a Machiavellian personality, duplicitous, cold selfishness. So it is easy to hurt and be destructive. when you've got all three of these put together. So when people say, oh, well, he's a narcissist, I say he's much worse than that. And that's what we have to be fight against. And I am amazed at how many people don't call their representative. You know, I have all my representatives in my cell phone. And so once I entered in their numbers, local in Washington, D.C., I can push a button and call them. And the people that respond and answer are very nice. They will listen to you. And whether you're for something they're doing or against something that you're doing. But what most people don't know is that you feel, oh, what difference can I make? Well, yes, you're one person making a phone call. But if there are 1,000 people making that same phone call that day, it's called blowing up the phones, and you get their attention. So, you know, when they started separating children at the border, you know, I just picked up my phone and I called my representatives and said, this is unacceptable, keeping my fingers crossed that 1,000 more people called that day to say that as well.
And in that case, at least temporarily, it had an effect. Mm-hmm. They actually stopped the separations for a while. Now it looks like they're back at it again. And
we need to call again. And I haven't had a chance to call, but I am promising everyone now that on Tuesday I will be calling my representatives about the issue of this act of murder by the state, telling parents that they have to remove their children from our country and off the medical procedures and devices and therapies that are keeping them alive and making them well, and that won't survive without being on it.
Well, I think the main thing...
That this is just unacceptable.
I think a number of people have sort of pointed out that Trump is definitely a problem, the problem in some ways, but an equal problem is Mitch McConnell and the Republican Party at this point. In general, I mean, there's exceptions, but in general, their lack of willingness to call Trump to account on basically constitutional issues about their own authority and ability to do things about what's going on. And you would think that on some level they would stand up to some of this and feel like it's being done in their name and they're going to take some responsibility for it. And what it is exactly that's frightening, whether it's they're afraid of Trump or if he doesn't support them, they're not going to be reelected, or whether they honestly now have come around to the same logic and see the world in the same crazy terms that he does, it's not clear. I don't think it's obvious what exactly is happening here. But it's shocking that the U.S. Senate doesn't, you know, haul this guy in. When the Congress people, the guy says, I'm going to spend money that's not appropriated by the legislature, that the Republicans in Congress don't go nuts. I mean, what am I? I mean, are they chopped liver? They've been elected to public office, you know, to represent people from their district, and they have certain views. And are they comfortable to sort of sit there and just say, well, one branch is now going to take over from the other two, and we don't have a role anymore to play in appropriating funding, which is, there's nothing more fundamental in the U.S. Constitution than the idea that the legislature appropriates money. The president, the executive branch, doesn't get to just go out and spend stuff on what it wants to spend it on. And, you know, the bill has to start in the House if it's about money, which is supposed to be the more democratic, you know, more diverse body and more representative body, because there's more of them and they, you know, represent smaller numbers of people each, so they really can speak for the people. And they just sit there and watch this stuff happen, and there's no response at all. I mean, leave aside what the particular policy is or whether the wall is as crazy as I think it is and ineffective as it is. I mean, it's not the way to actually stop people somewhere. It's not going to work. But it's throwing this huge money. It will stop, you know, animals from migrating and cause environmental problems, but it's not going to stop determined people who are desperate for family food for their families. There are tunnels under the existing walls now that some of them go a half mile. This is a quick little story, but I was at a friend's house, and he had somebody he'd hired to help work in his yard. He was an undocumented guy, and I speak Spanish, so we're talking together. And I asked him, like, how'd you get here, you know? I said, some people fly. They manage to get here, you know, and didn't overstay their visa or something. Or did you, like, come across the desert crawling on your hands and knees? He goes, no, I drove through a tunnel in a truck, and it was a half-mile-long tunnel. And, you know, that's how he got to the United States, in a half-mile-long tunnel through a truck. And the idea that you're going to build a wall on top of the border and that's going to stop people from coming here, it's not working now and it's not going to work in the future. If you wanted to build a wall, which is not a good idea anyway, do it with electronic stuff. Figure out some modern technology that actually allows you to figure out what's going on and respond to the problem. So you have one guy with crazy ideas does this, and nobody in the 535 members of the U.S. legislature, I'm not saying nobody, the Democrats are going crazy, but none of the Republicans in that body are speaking up. There was one Republican spoke out, thought this was outrageous. So one guy. But I don't think it's going to save the soul of the Republican Party to have one person speak out. It's just that's the most shocking thing to me. Not that there's a crazy guy in the White House, that can happen and whatever, but that there's nobody in the Republican Party thinks he should be brought to account.
The enablers.
Yeah.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. I'm your host, Jill Cody, and we're speaking with Mike Rotkin, five-time mayor of the city of Santa Cruz. And following this program is State of Mind. Tune in to KSQD on State of Mind, hosted by Santa Cruz's own Deborah Sloss. This month, Deborah and her guests continue their look at mindfulness practices and creating emotional balance. Learn how you can develop compassion towards others and yourself and improve your emotional health. State of Mind airs Sunday evening at 6 p.m. here on KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org, immediately following Be Bold America. So, Mike, just to continue about the Congress and half of the Republican Congress not doing anything, I think that there is a combination of things going on. One is I don't know how many, let me put it this way. When you study psychopathy, they like this limelight. So you find more of them in politics and in financial institutions, by the way. So that's one issue. And I'm beginning to wonder, again, not having a psychology degree, but I'm beginning to wonder if Mitch McConnell is in a dark triad because of what he's been capable of doing these last few years. And then you also have people afraid probably of the Trump tweet, right. That would hurt them. But also, in 2010, the Democrats did not come out enough. We lost the 2010 election, and they were able to gerrymander districts for a decade.
It's an absolutely critical issue.
It's a critical issue. And this 2020 election is not only crucial as a presidential election, but it is also a census election, too. And so I think a lot of them don't feel they need to respond to their a constituency in their district because they're very comfortable with the gerrymandering.
Well, the point is, in some ways, they are responding to a constituency, even if they themselves might be willing to move on something or might be appalled by taking children out of their mother's arms. The districts have been gerrymandered in such a way that they have these completely safe districts for very wacky right-wing ideas. And the activists in those districts call them on the phone, just like you're suggesting the left needs to get more involved in. Mm-hmm. And so if they don't speak out in the Republican point of view, or if they were to speak up and say something negative, they'd start getting like crazy calls from their district, and they would be disproportionately from the people who think that Donald Trump's God. And so there's a real serious problem when you have people who have that lack of accountability of what's going on overall. And because of the gerrymandering, they represent they have far smaller percentage of the actual population of their states are represented by the Republican Party. In other words, you think it should be one person, one vote, so everybody's vote should count the same. But the way they've done this gerrymandering, it's fixed up so basically it's impossible for the people of color. They're divided against each other if it's done on a racial basis or if it's based on Democratic registration against political basis. These kind of gerrymandered situations mean it makes people safe to do crazy stuff. And even if they wanted to be rational, they sometimes will be called on account by the people that they're sort of a sorcerer's apprentice. They've created this gerrymandered system, and now they're accountable to these constituents they've created who are a little bit wacky, even from a traditional Republican point of view.
Well, in these last few minutes, maybe we can talk about what the listeners can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing to reunite this country or to prevent the decline of our democracy, to see the threats that are happening to our democracy, and to be part of saving it. We've spoken about one, which is, if you're not doing it now, start calling your representatives. I sometimes think we're very logical, rational people, and we are busy, and we just don't think, or we fall prey to that mindset that my vote doesn't count. Who am I? I'm just one person.
Right.
But there's a lot of propaganda around that. There are a lot of people that want you to think that your vote doesn't count, because then you don't vote.
You know, I was always been amused at, and sometimes terrified by the fact that in many, many elections, one vote in each precinct made the difference. You know, in other words, if you look at Pennsylvania in the last presidential election, that if one vote in each of the precincts had shifted over and stuff, Pennsylvania would have gone the other way, and there would have been, you know, the Electoral College would have had a perhaps different outcome. That's pretty interesting thought.
You know, it is.
All I have to do is get one person in each precinct to change. One thing I think people can do, this, for some of our listeners, that's going to be keeping doing what they're doing, because Santa Cruz is pretty good mm-hmm. about this. For others, it might be something new that they want to get involved in and start doing. And that's looking at this, the elections in state legislatures that are coming up in this election in 2020. The former President Obama and former Attorney General Eric Holder have a major campaign effort of addressing these state legislatures. They got a lot of money they've raised to work on this. And a lot of this work is phone calling, and with the modern phone system and cell phones that people have, it's possible. And the Indivisible group in Santa Cruz, and you could, if you just Google Indivisible Santa Cruz, you'll find them. It's that simple. Google Indivisible.
They've been a guest on this show,
and they are organizing ways that people in Santa Cruz you can commit an hour. You don't have to commit your whole life to this, or you can get excited, as I have and others have, and, you know, spend several hours calling, sometimes for an election in Tennessee or someplace, phone calls to people, talking about the state legislative races that are going on. They train people. You don't have to know anything to start on this. You have to have the values that this is a good idea, to make sure we undo gerrymandering and have legislatures that reflect the demographic reality of the places where people live. And so I would contact them and ask, how can I help? And you'll find that, you know, they will train you very quickly. And this is not a big, big commitment you're making. But with, let's say, half an hour of preparation and an hour of actual calls, you'll make a difference. And if you decide to do this several times between now and 2020 is a ways away, we can actually turn these elections around in these state legislatures and undo a lot of the worst gerrymandering that's been going on. And that is, in some ways, the biggest key. Karl Rove was a genius back in 2010. I mean, I've given credit, for, you know, not credit for his values or anything else, but as far as mechanically knowing something smart to do, figuring out that the control of these legislatures really mattered. And the Republicans outspent the Democrats 3-1 in these state legislative elections across the country. And so, again, something people can do, call up, you know, the organization, ask them if you can help. They'll plug you into something, and it's fun to do this. Let me just say this in addition. It's a job that needs to be done, and this reminds me of my experience in the 60s. If politics was all, it's got to be done, we have to do this because the world needs it, I mean, that's important. People should do the right thing. But it's also fun. You meet other people in this process. There'll be a training meeting or something where you go and actually hook up with other folks, and you'll find new friends and connections. And so being part of a political movement is actually not just a burden or a sacrifice you're going to make. It's part of a way of life that can actually make you much happier. And then the kind of, like, frustration you have when you sit there by yourself just completely outraged by the crap that's going on. And so the idea of stepping up and asking to volunteer and help with this process of these state legislatures, that's something people can keep doing. Thank you for those of you that have been doing it. Start doing it if you haven't been doing it before.
And that's Indivisible Santa Cruz, but there's also an Indivisible Monterey as well.
Thank you.
So, and it brings back, ties us back to an American value of building community. You step into a new community.
Exactly.
You're a bold citizen that steps out and starts taking action in a new community. And as you said, you meet new people, and you don't feel alone, and you're on the constructive side instead of just being constructive outrage instead of just being outraged.
And as far as what people can stop doing, I think we need to stop. You mentioned this earlier. We need to stop thinking that we're powerless. I mean, I understand why people feel that way. It's not like, oh, you know, I can't imagine. How come you felt that way? What went wrong with your childhood or something? No, we live in a world that is organized towards making us feel powerless and feeling like we can't really do anything. And, when, you know, maybe we can vote, at vote election day or something. But, you know, I can't really affect who the candidates are. You can. Those are all things you can be involved in and make a difference in. And so I think people need to stop thinking, I can't make a difference here. I can't make something happen. And, again, back to a lot of my optimism these days comes from my experience in the 60s when things seemed pretty grim and it seemed like we didn't have any power. And so a lot of our early actions were kind of, I will describe them as sort of moralistic things. Like I burned my draft card because I didn't want to be associated with, the war effort that was going on and the idea of killing people halfway across the planet. I didn't really do it so much at first because I thought it was going to work. It wasn't like a strategy. My first strategy was, let's get 10,000 people to do it, and we won't do it unless 10,000 of us do it, and there's too many to arrest us and stuff. So I was in Central Park, and we didn't get 10,000 people there. Only 154 of us showed up, but we burned our draft cards. And that action, which, again, was not done for pragmatic reasons. It was more like a moral sense of, I don't want to be associated with this horrible stuff. I want to speak out on that level. But it turns out we built a movement that actually started to have some impact on the draft and the war and the other things going on. And I think we're in exactly that situation again today. There's nothing fundamentally different. If people speak out, if people begin to act, we will see that we have an impact and it makes a difference. And that we have to get beyond this idea that I can't do anything, I'm powerless. Unfortunately, that never used to be the American value. Most Americans felt like we can do stuff. We're efficacious. We're pragmatic. We can get stuff done. We can fix things. We know how to make things work. I think people are feeling pretty depressed about that. I don't know, I can't fix things. I can't make things better in my neighborhood. And at whatever level we're talking about, the national level that we've been discussing, or like local community politics, that if you get involved, you can change things.
Well, and that I often thought, what did it happen that we became a can-don't country?
Really?
We used to be a can-do country, right. But we became a can-don't. And I think a lot of it is for decades, there's been a push on austerity. You know, we can't fund what they call entitlement programs. We can't fund this. We can't fund that. There isn't enough money. And yet it's just being sucked so fast up into the 0.01% pockets.
If you could return to the tax rates of 1980,
yes,
the real tax rates, what it looks like nominally on, you know, they read it about or something, but the actual rates being paid by corporations and the wealthy in 1980, we would not have a deficit in the United States. If you went back to the tax rates of 1960, which were even higher than in 1980 and stuff, we would have so much wealth that we could begin spending on public projects here and abroad. I mean, once again, wouldn't be a question of like, is foreign aid cutting into our domestic programs? We'd be able to do both. We'd have money for a decent public transportation system, housing for people. And that's a simple question about tax rates. It's not simple to make it happen. It's a big fight to change that reality. We haven't had an increase in the gas tax, which is what pays for most of our roads and public transit, since 1994. So to me, it's like, We have the resources to make this stuff happen. It's not like impossible.
Just need to move them around a little bit. Well, and there are pressures like Star Trek's giant chessboard. I kind of think about it like this, where there are so many pressures against our democracy. The corporatocracy, oligarchy, theocracy. Matter of fact, I was just watching a really great show on Netflix called The Family, and how they're not interested in democracy at all. So, thank you so much, Mike. We've been talking to Mike Rodkin, and I also wanted to thank my program assistant, Emily Dunham, for her technical support, and another big thank you to our terrific guest, five-time mayor, Mike Rodkin. Next on Be Bold America, we'll be discussing the global climate strike being held from September 20th to September 27th. We'll be speaking with Stan Rushworth, Cabrillo College's Instructor Emeritus of Native American Literature and Critical Thinking, whose focus is on Native American issues and the climate crisis, and Dr. Nancy Glock Greenwich, who holds a doctorate from Harvard University in Philosophy and Education and is representing the global climate strike events to be held in Santa Cruz. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for State of Mind with Deborah Schloss. My name is Jill Cody. Keep, stop, start.